You're listening to Jedi and Germs, a weekly podcast brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Podcast Networks. I'm Alan Zog, the Jedi. He's John English, the Germs guy. Hey, John.
Hey, Alan.
How goes it?
Goes pretty good.
Sweet. And Devin, aloha and a hello to you.
Why aloha?
I really wish right now with the weather the way it is that we were kind of in the warm state of Hawaii during this aloha season because it's cold.
I believe there's college hoops going on in Hawaii right now.
Right? And college football this weekend in Hawaii too for the locals.
Well.
Oh, come on.
It's kind of college football. Not really, but kind of.
You're starting this out like that, are you? Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
All right, mister, take a timeout with 20 seconds and then blow the game.
Okay, you know what? Shut up. Let's talk jazz. Let's talk some jazz. John, take us
yeah,
into
let's jump into right. Our jazz.
Jazz are 7-11. You know, we knew this was going to be a tough part of the schedule, but it was sure tougher without Rudy Gobert. Jazz, in fact, have gone 2-4 since Rudy went down. I think that's about how we thought they would do with Rudy going down. But at least they have a 3-game homestand coming up. So maybe they can turn the ship around a little bit. Especially since the next one's Chicago.
Was that ship with a P?
Yes.
Oh, I see. Oh.
Because they've had some really
bad
games.
See if they can turn this boat around.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Hey, Devin, let's keep this podcast family-oriented, so try not to make too much of a suggestion there.
As producer, I am responsible for ensuring that the content is appropriate. I just needed to know if I needed to censor anything.
We'll just throw in poop emoji right about now, right? So, it's
fulfill your duties.
Yeah, right. It's been tough to watch. It has. But even after all is said and done, the Jazz are still 7-11. That's not, 4 games below 500. I mean, we're 18 games, almost a quarter of the way into the season. All is not lost. I don't think so.
No. In fact, if you want to put a positive spin on it, Jazz have as many wins as the 8-seed Grizzlies.
Right?
So, you know, they're not in the upper tier. I don't know how many tiers you want to create. Let's say there's the upper tier, and then there's this middle tier, and then there's the playoff cusp tier. I would say they're in that. They're not in the given up already tier,
right?
Like Dallas or Chicago is, but you know, they're right now they're kind of hanging on for dear life, and it's just a matter of how can they get through this without Rudy. Still got a couple more weeks without him at least.
Well, in the West, there's the Warriors, and in the East, there's the Celtics, and then there's a lot of tears everywhere else, right?
You're talking about crying tears, aren't you?
Hey.
Oh.
That was puntastic.
That was indeed. No, I want to talk about the most recent loss for just a moment, because during the game last night, I mean, we don't want to revisit it too much because it was pretty awful. But against the Sixers, I mean, we might even call the Sixers our second favorite team on this podcast, right? Because we have had a love affair with the Sixers going on for 3 years now, watching them rebuild, watching them get to where they are right now. And quite frankly, that they're paying dividends right now and they're fun to watch. But interesting comment I saw somebody say last night, and I don't remember who it was, saying that it isn't so much that the Sixers are this good or the Jazz are this bad, but the Sixers just have a lot more talent, right? More talented than the Jazz are right now.
Well, the Sixers are 9-7. Their talent is finally paying off. Everything's finally clicking for them. In fact, they would be that much better if they hadn't traded their picks and they'd taken Jason Tatum third. Can you imagine him on this team?
Oh, my goodness. Right?
But, yeah, Philly finally has all their guys, and the Jazz are missing a lot of crucial pieces. It's not just Gobert. They're missing Exum, which they really had big plans for. And Joe Johnson's still out, so.
Yeah, and for all of the people that are down on Ricky Rubio right now, I'm going to put it out there. I was talking in a conversation with some friends earlier. I think the problem with Ricky Rubio is as much chemistry as it is anything. Quinn Snyder's system is so concise, right? In the movement and the passes and the things that happen. And you put a guy in there like Rubio, who's very good, a pass first oriented, very good guy. Now he's being relied on to make shots, maybe take shots he's not used to taking. And he's making passes to guys that just aren't ready for him. And so he really just hasn't looked good in the early going, nor has he had a healthy team to necessarily play with in the early going. So I don't know if it's the product of the system or if it's just the product of the guy's been on this team for 18 games and that chemistry maybe isn't where it should be yet.
I think it is partly chemistry, but I also think Quinn hasn't figured out how to use him correctly.
Right.
Ricky is having a career high in points, but he's having a career low in assists.
Right.
And, you know, his shooting has regressed to the norm. His shooting is actually worse than it was last year. He has games where he's great and he has games where he just looks uncomfortable. And it still comes down to, you do not want Ricky to be leading this team in shot attempts.
Right.
He isn't. Now he's third, but he's still third.
Right.
We need somebody. We need more offense. Ricky is best when the other four guys score more than him. He will set them up. He will get the assists. He will get 9 assists a game, but the guys have to hit their shots. And the Jazz, the guys who shoot the most aren't hitting their shots.
Right.
You know, Rodney Hood's still at 41%. Donovan Mitchell's at 38%. You know, they need Ingles to shoot more. He's still only 8 attempts a game. I mean, that they just need more from Ingles on that in that
well,
front.
And my last thought on Ricky, because I'm going to move to somebody you've already mentioned, but Ricky also, I believe, and you can look at the numbers, you have him up. I don't, but I got to believe he's turning the ball over at the highest rate he has in a while as well.
Highest rate?
Like maybe he's got more turnovers per game than he has in the past few
years,
isn't he? So
that's really disturbing that he's having a career high for turnovers and a career low for assists.
Right.
It's by far the worst assist to turnover ratio he's ever had.
So a couple of those problems, one, I think goes back to chemistry, and two, it just goes back to shot making. I mean, you've got a Jazz team that's so hot and cold. Hot and cold, hot and cold, hot and cold. They're blistering hot against Orlando, and then they can't hit the broad side of the barn against Philly. One of the players you mentioned that I have harped on in the past, maybe small, but now I'm wanting to get on more, is Rodney Hood. I want more consistency from Rodney Hood, and I think we're seeing it now. I think he's finally finding a rhythm, but you don't want to talk about the epitome of a hot and cold player is Rodney Hood.
Yeah, and the thing with Rodney is he's still at 40% from three.
Which is good. That's really good.
It's great.
Yeah.
But he's only at 42% from two.
Yeah.
So.
He
has his days. But
to me, from two, I think what should get him going is, you know, you don't want the guy to quit shooting. You want him to keep shooting. But there are some occasions where I think he steps back for those mid-range shots when he should attack the rim. I know that's not Rodney's game, but I think Rodney would find a better rhythm and probably get more opportunities if he attacked the rim more often, wouldn't he?
I would think so. That's never been his game, but they really need it to be his game this year.
Yeah, they do.
His average is, this is the most free throws attempts that he's had in his career, but it's still just 2.9 per game.
Right.
I mean, if he's your leading scorer, you want to see him at the line 6 or 7 times. And that's still not happening. And he's a great free throw shooter. He's at 91% this year. That's incredible. If you're at 91%, we need to figure out ways to get him on the line more.
Yeah. And that's the crazy thing about the Jazz. The Jazz have a very good free throw shooting team. You've got Rodney at 90%, 91%. You got Rubio at above 90%. Even Donovan Mitchell, for as bad a shooter as he is at 85% from the free throw line. Guys are able to shoot it. I think a lot of them need to get to the line more. And that is a problem that I'd like to see remedied, I hope, soon.
I think, if I remember right, Yeah, they're the number one free throw shooting team.
Wow.
83.9%.
That's impressive.
Number one in the league. They've never been that. So we got to figure out how to use that to our advantage.
Well, I wonder where they rank as far as free throws attempted per game, though. That might be a telling tale right there.
22nd.
Ouch. 22nd, but you're the best free throw shooting team in the league. That's something. Yep. So that's got to change. That has to change. Yep. So, no, I mean, yeah, you can spin the last few games one way or the other, but you can find a positive spin in a lot of things with it. I mean, Donovan Mitchell, his play has been wonderful. I mean, he's you know, he's not shooting the ball particularly well, but he's making decisions that, you know, sure, he makes mistakes as a rookie, but he's been making some very good decisions on the floor. And Quinn seems to let him have loosen the leash and let him have some time and some go at it on the floor a lot more. And I like what I'm seeing from him. So you can spin some positives out of the Jazz. Donovan Mitchell, Rodney Hood starting to get better. Help me out. What's some more positives here I'm missing, guys? Because I know there's more than just those.
Quinn's hair looks really good.
Okay,
this season.
Stop it. Basketball, not hair.
Let me shift this slightly because I wanted to delve a little more into how the team is with and without Rudy.
Okay. Maybe that'll give us some more positive spins.
The first 12 games with Rudy, Jazz were 28th in offensive rating, 97.3. Just terrible, terrible, terrible. But they were third in defense, 99.7. That, you will notice, left them a negative net rating, and that was at negative 2.4, so they were 20th. So still not great. Very, very similar to when Rudy first entered the starting lineup when Dante was starting a couple years ago. Just bad offense, but good defense. Without Rudy, it is flipped. Without Rudy, the past six games, they are 10th in offense at 107.6, but they are 21st in defense at 106.9. That does give them a positive net rating of 0.8. That puts them at 16th. That is a team fighting for the eighth seed, but the team has had to completely change their identity with Rudy out of the lineup. And so if they are a lot more free on offense, then that offense needs to make sure they are hitting their shots. And as we saw with Philadelphia, I mean, there were a ton of non-contested shots that just didn't go down.
Right.
I mean, the first 6 minutes, I think the score was 6-5, just miss after miss after miss. Defense holding their own, but the offense just not hitting their shots. And eventually it just...
Yeah, we've seen it against more than just Philly over the last six or eight games. I mean, Philly being one of them, but you can go back and look at a couple of the other games they've made where they couldn't hit the broads out of the barn. I mean, they were shooting themselves out of the building in the wrong way. And I don't know what changes that, because a lot of their looks they're getting are good looks. A lot of them haven't been bad looks. I don't know. I also know that on offense, they click more when they're passing it around. I mean, the other night, again, even against Philly, a couple of the plays that turned out well for them, they had 4 and 5 passes in one offensive possession. When the Jazz are passing like that, they're going to get an easier open shot, and maybe that's their key to making shots. It's just finding that extra pass and finding that high percentage shot.
Yes, that's how their offense is set up. It's, I don't know what the word is. It's kind of ironic that the offense is set up to be really effective as long as you have guys that can shoot.
Right.
You know, Hayward in this offense would be averaging 24 points a game if he didn't break his ankle and leave. But, you know, Rodney's, he's finding the pressure of being the number one scorer. And he is the number one scorer. He's leading the team right now. But right. His offensive rating is actually a career worst so far. It's an adjustment. It's an adjustment for him to be that guy now. He's 17.4 a game. Everything else that he's doing is down. His rebounds are down. His assists are down. His steals are down. His blocks are down. I guess you can say his turnovers are down. But he's, you know, excelling at everything else.
Yeah, he has.
Oh, I was looking at a wrong stat. His assists are actually up. But, you know, he's set up to be the scoring star, and he's shown that he can do it every fifth game, and he just needs to figure out how to do it every game.
Agreed. Sorry, I closed my notes here. I'll come back. Any other thoughts on the Jazz? I mean, dude, let's look ahead real quick. Jazz got a homestand. They're starting tomorrow night.
Yes.
Or tonight, if people are listening today.
Homestand against Chicago. Chicago's 3-11. They should win. They should crush them. Lauri Markkanen's been a good rookie for them, but our rookie should outshine him.
Agreed.
And, you know, let's see them get their confidence back with that. Next is Milwaukee. Milwaukee is up and down. They're 8-8. They had a burst when they got Bledsoe. They rattled off like 3 in a row, but they've lost their last 2. So that's a team they should be able to take advantage of. Greek Freak is amazing, and he does everything. So as long the Jazz can let him get his, but as long as they keep everyone else shut down, I think they should be able to win that game as well. And then Denver, Jazz beat Denver, but they had Gobert, and they were able to just really turn on their defense in the third quarter. So
However, Denver will be without Paul Millsap for the foreseeable future.
That's true.
Paul Millsap down with injury. Not that he is. I mean, he's a huge contributor for them. Obviously, Jokic is their big guy. And Denver's been pretty good, and Jokic has been really good this year. But without Paul Millsap, I think they're gonna have a different landscape coming into town. So that I still think the Jazz can win that game, but they can't have a 35% shooting night and expect to win that game. I mean,
they lost them in the middle of the Laker game.
Right.
They beat the Kings, but it's the Kings.
Yeah.
So.
And Denver's not a very good defensive team either. So the Jazz should be able to put points on them.
And hey, with no Millsap, you know what that means? Minutes for Trey Lyles.
Oh dear.
He's going to want a revenge game.
Yes, he will. Could Trey Lyles be the Jazz killer for a night?
Look pretty good against the Kings. Of course, it's not hard. But.
Go ahead, Devin. You want to say something?
I just want to like insert that laughing Leonardo DiCaprio gif right now. Can we do that in like an audio form? Should I just like pull that out? Come on, Trey
just,
Lyles.
Just picture the
killer.
Wolf of Wall Street right here.
Well, I guess if Trey Lyles becomes the Jazz killer, I know where everybody's going to find who they're going to find to blame it all on that night. And I know if anything, it'll be thanks to you, Devin, for making sure everybody remembers.
I do what I can.
All right.
Here's the thing. As bad as the Jazz have looked, this is very possible a 3-0 week. It is very possible.
I agree.
But it won't be.
Oh, see, I was going to say 3-0, 2-1. Devin's going to come back with, he did this on us 2 weeks ago. You're going to say 1-2, aren't you?
I'm going to say they win 1.5 games.
1.5?
Yes.
Who's the half?
I don't know. Probably Denver. I just hope it's the second half.
Yep.
Okay, all right, fair enough. You don't think they're going to beat Milwaukee?
I don't know. I'm going to be there, so probably not.
I'm going to be at all 3 games, so whoa,
they're going
0-3. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe we should stay home. Maybe we're the problem.
Go 2-1.
You think 2-1?
Okay. I don't know who they'll lose to, but they've lost to people that I had thought they shouldn't have lost to. So I just think that's going to happen in there somewhere. But I think they go 2-1.
All right.
Well, I have to ask. Let's just say somehow they went 1-2. Are you guys upset? Or are you willing to tank note?
I'm not willing to tank note yet. I know one of our good friends of the show who's been on with us before, Greg, it has been doing the tank note a lot lately, hashtag tank note. I'm not on board with that yet. No.
I'm not either.
No. Devin, I don't. Devin, stay away from it. Run away from the tank note. Run away.
I can't.
Dude.
I can't.
Don't jump on board that wagon yet. I can't. Yet. No.
We need our process, guys. We need a process.
All right. Let's move on from the Jazz to NBA news and notes.
So, should we just give Brad Stevens coach of the year now?
Based on current performance, you might as well. I don't know. I mean, let me ask you this. Do they keep this level of play up the rest of the season? In your honest opinion.
You mean, do they never lose another game?
Well, I mean, they've won 16 straight, but do they really secure them? Do they secure themselves the number one seed in the East by the
end
of the season?
Are they going to win 60 straight is what you're asking me?
Or are they going to win 60 games, period? Do you think they win 60 this year?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you think they're for real at 16 and 2 right now?
Well, they have to be.
Okay.
You don't get to 16 and 2 and you're not for real.
I'm just saying.
I mean, they're J-Lo for real right now. I mean,
they're,
you know, what I'm saying?
They're 16 and 2 better than Golden State for real right now. Are they that good where they're better than Golden State?
I don't know. I think a lot of teams are still figuring it out.
That's why I'm asking.
I don't know that they're 16 and 2 good, you know, that ratio throughout the year, but they're close to it.
John,
and kudos to Uncle Drew. He's playing out of his mind, and the young guys.
I agree.
Yeah. The J team, Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I don't think people expected both of them to be playing at this level right now, and they probably would not have been able to showcase that if Hayward was there. But they have both stepped up to an amazing degree. Kyrie's having, I almost want to say, a Westbrook type season, but Westbrook, it was very clear that he was heads and shoulders above everybody else. And Kyrie has a really good supporting cast. The J team, Al Horford, you know, Marcus Smart's just that great perimeter defender. And I think a lot of credit does have to go to Brad Stevens, because this roster is like 2/3 of the roster turned over. And a lot of that was so that they could have Hayward on the team, and he disappeared. So that automatically makes you think, okay, Celtics are the fourth or fifth best team in the East now.
Right.
And no, they've not only been the best team, but they've been easily the best team.
Well, and here's,
I think it's incredible.
Here's the thing. We were talking in the offseason. I remember saying this. I remember us talking about it. They lost guys like Olynyk, Bradley. They lost Crowder,
Jarebko.
They lost their defensive unit, right? They all got sent away, and we thought they weren't going to be nearly as good defensively. But hold up. They're playing really good defense right now. They're playing really good basketball. And a guy like, I mean, Quinn Snyder with the Jazz in the West, you got Brad Stevens with the Celtics in the East. Both of them have developed a defensive identity with their teams, and no matter what personnel they plug into it, it doesn't really change that identity. And they're playing extremely well. So yeah, back to your initial question. Yeah, Brad Stevens should definitely be the favorite for Coach of the Year right now, hands down.
I hadn't really realized this. Boston is 20th in offensive rating, but they are having a historically good defensive season. They're number one in defense.
Yeah.
Easily.
That's crazy. And I'm also going to say that I'm going to toot my own horn here a little bit, because I really expected Tatum to be this good right away. You know, I Jaylen Brown, I thought, was going to continue to be a contributor. But I had a feeling both of them would be a very good as a tandem, maybe in another year or two, maybe not right away. But Tatum, I expected this out of, and Tatum has been a monster. He's been exceptionally
because well. Because of Summer League, though, right?
Well, yeah, we all saw that. Devin, you and I were there. We saw that live. I mean, Tatum is good ball player.
Yeah, Tatum was one of the best players there. I mean, the only players I can think that were in his league were Exum and Mitchell.
And I think Tatum was the best player in Jazz Summer League here. I think Tatum was the best player on the floor.
No, I'm talking Jazz Summer League, and Exum was up there.
Yeah, he was.
We forget how good Exum was.
Agreed.
But yeah, Tatum definitely looked like the real deal getting there. And Brown looked good too, but you just kind of assume that was a guy taking a second year jump.
And it's crazy. Yeah. You know, I was talking about this earlier with somebody else too. It's crazy. If you look at the rookie class right now, Ben Simmons is on historic levels, right? He's the best rookie in the NBA, period. But you've got Tatum, Mitchell, Kuzma. You got other guys around the league right now that are bunched in that second tier below Ben Simmons that if Ben Simmons wasn't playing, you legitimately have 5 or 6 cases for Rookie of the Year, don't you? Tatum being one of them.
Yeah. Yeah. And Mitchell, you could say, well, Mitchell's scoring 14.9 points a game. Tatum's at 13.9, but that's, you know, Tatum has a solid supporting cast.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's kind of weird. Yeah, but like when I was looking at rookie rankings the other day, Donovan Mitchell is usually third on people's lists. It's usually Ben Simmons, Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell. There was one, I think, that had Dennis Smith third and Mitchell fourth, but he's differentiating himself from the pack. And even then, as I glance at Dennis Smith, their numbers are pretty similar.
Yeah, Smith has been good. Smith has been very good. So I
it's and even just, then Smith's shooting isn't that great, but he's just solid at everything else, which is what Mitchell's been doing.
Again, this goes back to the credit of this draft. The draft class this year was deep, was very good, and we're seeing that play out in the NBA right now. I mean, we're gonna see
about time.
We're gonna see
I love deep drafts.
We're going to see another guy come into town with Chicago tomorrow who is, again, another one of those rookies that I think is going to have himself a decent year for Chicago. So,
yeah, he was the one where Chicago that's all they got for giving away Jimmy Butler, but he actually looks like he's going to be a pretty decent pick.
Right.
I think he's usually like fifth on people's rookie lists. So I don't think Chicago can be too upset. I think they're going to have fun tanking this year.
Yeah.
Let Laurie get his scoring, and they're just going to hope for a top three pick next year. This is the last year having the rules that it does.
Right.
And here's the thing I will say about tanking, especially this year. There are already 5 or 6 really, really, really terrible teams. So if the Jazz wanted to just cash in now and try to tank, I think it would be hard for them to be as bad as they would need to be for tanking to be worth it. In the West, Dallas and Sacramento, they've got that basement covered. And in the East, Chicago and Atlanta, they've got that covered. And so it would take active effort for the Jazz to try to work their way to be the fifth worst team. So,
well, just a reminder. You know, The draft percentages have changed coming into next year, which makes, you know, those close picks a little more likely to jump up. The other thing,
that's not till next year though.
That's not in this upcoming draft. I thought that was the 2018 draft that was supposed to take place.
No, the draft in 7 months is the same rules. It's the 2019 draft where those rules kick in.
Oh, son of a. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, still, I want to remind everyone that I am a free agent. The Jazz could sign me, and I can help them reach the bottom of the league.
All right, fine. Okay, let's move on now. We've talked a lot of rookie and NBA talk and coach of the year. You wanted to talk playoff picture at the moment. I mean, almost a quarter of the way through the season right now. Where are we standing?
Here's the crazy thing about the playoffs. If they started today, and we'll just go for the East first because it's kind of quick. If the playoffs started today, the Milwaukee Bucks would not make it. I think a lot of people had them at round 4th or 5th in their predictions. They would actually be out. Your Eastern Conference standings right now, the top 8 are Boston, Toronto, Detroit. Thanks, Avery Bradley. Cleveland is 4th. They've won 5 straight. Washington is 5th. They're actually tied with Cleveland. New York. Hey, Hornacek. 7th is the Philadelphia, and 8th is Indiana.
Another rookie to watch is on that New York team too. So, But yeah, that's.
Yeah, he's, I mean, he's really just a rotation guy right now.
Yeah.
But he looks like he'll be decent in the long run.
But Detroit that high up, I mean, yeah, Avery Bradley, Drummond continues to be good. That's crazy. That's crazy that they're
finally.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I don't know if these standings hold though, because I think Cleveland climbs its way back up. You have to believe that LeBron and company get back up to the top two or three spots. I don't think there's a question there.
Let me just ask you this, see if you happen to know it. Do you know who Detroit's leading scorer is?
Oh, crap.
Reggie?
I'd be impressed if you knew.
It's not Reggie Jackson, is it?
No. It's Tobias Harris.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I had no idea. That's crazy.
Yeah, he's 18.7 points a game for Detroit. I think that's a factor. That's a career high for him.
Wow. Wow.
Anyway, and now moving to the West. Not only would the Jazz not make it, but other teams that I think a lot of people figured would be in the playoffs, Clippers and the Thunder would not be in. We can get to the Clippers in a minute, but Thunder are still just 7-9. The standings as they are now, it would be, you actually have Houston and Golden State tied for first. And I guess Houston has the tiebreaker so far. Third would be San Antonio. Then you have Portland, Minnesota, and Denver all there for fourth, fifth, and sixth. They're all at 10-7. Then you have New Orleans, and eighth would be Memphis. And it looks like Memphis and Oklahoma City have the same record, but Memphis has better something. So
okay,
that's got some surprises too.
Well, one team stands out right there in that top eight. One team.
Pelicans?
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. I don't think that maintains that way either, but wow. I mean, wow.
Yeah, Boogie and Davis did not look that good together last year. I had Gentry as my pick for on the hottest seat for coaches coming into this year.
I think we all did.
And yeah, and Cousins is actually putting up better numbers than Davis right now.
Wow.
Cousins is averaging 26.6 points a game, 12.9 rebounds, 5.5 assists. Compare that to Anthony Davis. He's at 25.8 points, 11.3 rebounds, 2.9 assists. Davis is getting 2 blocks a game. Boogie's 1.5. Boogie's also getting 1.7 steals. He also leads that team in steals. So between the two of them, they are good enough to cover up the sins of the rest of the roster, which is pretty thin.
And cover up the sins. But
Jameer Nelson's
Gentry.
Been a good backup point guard. Arguably, yeah. I guess when you have two guys that are just that good, it's really hard for a coach to screw it up. But and the thing is, their supporting cast is really bad. Etwan Moore is the fourth leading scorer. You know?
Wow.
So Drew Holiday has been good for them. He still can't shoot from outside, but he does everything else. And it's just good enough to get them in the playoffs. And it's much needed. I think my guess is that now that Boogie's finally on a winning team where they have a winning record, that his attitude is able to just kick in and be that much better for everybody else. This is the first time he's on a winning team.
I still ever. Don't think they maintain this though.
Think they implode?
I don't know about implode. I'm not ready to say implode because I'm going to give them a little credit that they found their mojo a little bit, but I still don't think they're good enough for top eight. I still think they'll be around top 10, maybe.
Well, maybe. Let's look at their schedule. They've had more road games than home games,
right?
Their wins are mostly against easy teams. You know, that's a good point. They did beat the Cavaliers at one point. The Cavs were kind of in a lot of turmoil at the beginning of the year.
Right.
You know what? Yeah. Most of their wins are against losing teams anyway. In fact, the Pacers. Pacers and Cavs look like the only playoff teams they've beaten. Everybody else is losing records that they have won.
So they've won. They've won the games they're supposed to. Yeah, they've won what they're supposed to do. I mean, I don't remember what we picked at the beginning of the year when we did our Vegas over unders, but I gotta say, you know, I think we might have gone over and maybe just slightly over, but I don't know. I think the basketball odds even out as the season goes on. And they're going to have to. And Pelicans, I think, are still going to be in top 10 tier. They're not Sacramento and Boogie Cousins bad. I think they're going to be a good team, but I just don't think they're a playoff team.
You know, I can find it in a minute what our predictions were. But yeah, I'll just read off the wins. The Lakers, the Kings, the Cavs, the Mavericks, the Bulls in overtime, the Pacers, the Clippers, the Hawks, and the Thunder. So yeah, those are their wins. Their losses, they've had a lot of playoff losses, and you know, as far as they've lost to the Warriors, they've lost to the Grizzlies, they lost to the Nuggets, they lost to the Raptors twice. They've already played the Raptors twice. It's like they're beating who they should, and they're losing to who you think they would.
Right. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see this playoff picture. I mean, I'm glad we're doing this now, quarter of the way through. Let's revisit some of this again at the halfway point, because I think at that point we can kind of, I think by the time we hit the halfway point, I think we'll have a pretty good idea who is who the remainder of the season. Mm-hmm. So come January, middle of January, I think we're going to know what to expect the rest of the season for most, if not all, of the playoff bound teams.
Yeah.
So at that time, will you guys join me on the tank?
No, because we will not have to at that time.
Jump on board, boys.
Nope, not yet.
Nope, not going to happen.
That's the problem. You wait too long, you're going to miss it.
No, 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 no. All right, moving on. We didn't get any listener questions, did we?
No, did not.
All right, moving on to Devin's quick hits.
There's only one basketball quick hit that I really think we need to talk about. And that's my main man, LaVar Ball.
Do we need to give him time? Do we really have to?
I have been a little harsh on Papa Ball.
No, let's not. No, no. I don't want to hear any baller remorse.
I have maybe not given him the credit he deserves. But I mean, he single-handedly got those UCLA players back home to the States. So just bravo to him. Alan, come on, join me. Okay.
I refuse anyway to give him or Trump too much time on this show, so hurry up.
After Papa Ball fought the good fight in international relations and basically saved the lives of three young Americans, he was critical of the Lakers' coaching staff and their handling of his son, future superstar and greatest of all time, Lonzo Ball.
Oh, you're finally getting to a good point. Yes, I'm looking forward to this discussion.
And he called them soft. What world are we living in? I mean, don't get me wrong. I've started to come around to LaVar a little bit recently. But, John, start us off. When does a parent say that?
No. No, and that's the thing with LaVar as far as dealing with the team. I mean, there's all the other extra stuff. But for him saying, you don't know how to coach my son, I really think that LaVar Ball thinks that when Luke Walton's done, he is going to be the next coach of the Lakers. It's just how his ego is. And I don't think it's helpful. All the stuff with trolling Trump was hilarious. But anything he's doing with the team, I don't think it's helpful. I think the Lakers are one of the few franchises that could handle a guy like him. And I don't think it's unfair to Lonzo. I give LaVar all the credit in the world for raising Lonzo to this point and helping shape the young man into what he is. But LeVar is doing more harm than good to Lonzo for constantly talking about this.
Right. I mean, eventually you got to let baby bird fly, right? Got to let him leave the nest. And really, usually we tell people to stick to sports. We just want LeVar to stick to politics. Do you think maybe he should run for governor or maybe president? LeVar 2020?
Do they pay enough? That's the thing with LeVar, is do they pay enough?
So, Alan, you wanted to get in on this. Are the Lakers soft? are NBA coaches soft?
No. In fact, I think the opposite of Lakers. I can't believe I would be giving an organization credit that I've not been not even cared for a long time. But I think the Lakers are doing a pretty good job, and specifically Luke Walton's done a pretty good job with the Lakers. And I thought he's done a good job with Ball. Kuzma's played well. You look at that lineup, it's some of them are scrubs and some of them are on the cusp of good players, you know, but he's done a good job. I don't think they're soft at all. In fact, I think they've been pretty good.
Do you agree with John that maybe LeVar is trying to steal the team away from Luke?
Well, let's go to the quote specifically. They're soft. They don't know how to coach my son. I know how to coach him. Yes, I do think he is.
Would that be an absolute robbery?
Yes. And maybe as bad as I don't like the Lakers, maybe that's what the rest of the NBA world needs is LeVar Ball to coach them just so that they can be that bad for years to come.
I want to keep like this LeVar Ball thing going, but I know we've got other things to get to. Let's jump over real quick. Alan, I know you wanted us to bring it up. Danny Ainge now thinks the world is flat thanks to Kyrie Irving. So, you know, Kyrie's converting one person at a time, I guess. You guys want to talk a little bit of football?
Let's do it.
We've got a college football playoff rankings are out. Number one, you have Alabama. Number two, you have the fake U, Miami. Number three, you have Clemson. Number four, University of Oklahoma. And on the outside looking in, you've got an 11-0 University of Wisconsin, and you've got a 9-2 Auburn. After that, you've got Georgia, who was previously in, Notre Dame, who was previously in, Ohio State, and Penn State rounding out the top 10. Now, as it stands, we are looking at, let me see here. Two ACC teams, one SEC team, and what's Oklahoma? Are they a Big 12?
Yes, they're Big 12.
So what do you think? How does this shape up? Are we really going to see two ACC teams get in? Do you think you'll see two from one conference? And if so, which?
I think your top two teams stay as they are. I think Miami has been that good this year. And Devin, I think you would actually, I know you don't want to have to admit this because you actually watched the debacle, but they played your beloved Irish and pretty much smacked them around, didn't they?
They played an incredible game, and Notre Dame did not play as good a game as they could. It was kind of the worst case scenario for the Irish, but I'll give credit to Miami. They have performed well all season.
Yeah, they have.
They did struggle last week.
So I have to think 1 and 2, Alabama and Miami remain that way. I think they're that good. I don't know who, I mean, we're coming up on the last weekend of college football before you get into the conference championships. You know, Oklahoma has the potential of maybe losing another. Who did you say is number three? Clemson? I don't know if Clemson loses again, but well,
Clemson faces Miami at the end of the year.
Do they? Okay. So you have that potential. So here's the reason why I'm saying this is I think Wisconsin still has a chance to move up into that top four. Auburn's not going to make it. I'm sorry, a two-loss Auburn team. I don't care if you're going to show SEC favoritism if you're going to throw them into the top four ahead of an undefeated or even a one-loss Wisconsin and some of those other guys that are up there. I have to believe that Wisconsin gets in, and it might be maybe Clemson losing. Maybe Clemson losing to Miami.
Well, I mean, this could get interesting. You know, you look at this, and you could have a Clemson loss and you could have a conference loss with Oklahoma happen. You know what I mean? I don't know that Auburn even gets another game because they are in the same division as Alabama, aren't
right.
they?
Right, yeah, they are. I believe so.
You know what I mean? Georgia, I think, is in the East, SEC East. So if they lose, you could see Notre Dame jump them. Notre Dame has one game left against a ranked Stanford team. You know, it is highly unlikely that Notre Dame finds any way to get into that top four. But there's a lot that can happen with these teams where they're in the same conferences.
Yeah, that's true.
You're going to have a lot of really good matchups in the next 2 weeks, and who knows what it's going to end up looking like. Because what happens if Georgia goes from the East and Bama from the West, and you get another loss handed to Alabama and a good win for Georgia, and you know the reputation of the SEC, John, can you see two SEC teams sneaking in?
SEC, yeah, because it's the SEC. They're just always naturally assumed to be the best conference. Your initial question was, can two ACC teams make it? I would say no.
I would
say whoever loses between Miami and Clemson is out.
My other question there, and I'll add this as an addendum question to your quick hit here, but does an 11-0 or maybe even 11-1 Wisconsin, maybe they lose one, do they get left out of the playoff picture altogether?
They very well could.
I think if Wisconsin wins out, I think they're in.
I have to agree. That's what I think will happen.
Because their last game is against Ohio State, and they're ranked ninth. I think that will be a good enough win, you know, if they win.
Right.
To put them, because you know that Clemson or Miami has to drop out, and I don't see Auburn jumping them.
No, neither do I. Again, two-loss Auburn team, and you're right. They still have to face. I mean, even if they get that far, they may have to face, say, Alabama in the conference. You know, in it.
Well, they won't face. They won't face them this week. I think.
Oh, is it this week?
Isn't it the rivalry the week? Iron Bowl or whatever they call it?
So this game might decide whether Auburn even has a slight chance of doing so. I just don't see them leapfrogging Wisconsin at this point. I just don't.
I don't know. They beat Bama. Auburn. If they beat Bama this week, who knows?
But if Wisconsin beats Ohio State, they stay ahead of them. How can you? I don't know. I don't know how you can justify putting a two-loss team, even if they beat Bama, ahead of an undefeated Wisconsin team that just beat Ohio State.
I don't know either. And that's where it gets really interesting.
Here's the thing, though. If Bama loses, I still don't know if they fall out of the top four.
I agree.
That's what I'm saying.
I agree. But isn't Bama undefeated right now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't think they drop out either, but I don't think Auburn leapsfrog Wisconsin at that point either.
I don't know. You take down number one at the end of the season, you're making a compelling case. I think the thing that we're realizing here, and the college playoff format is great.
Still flawed.
It's still flawed. And we have four teams, and the question is, where do you draw the line? I mean, would eight teams be a bad thing?
No. I think you should at this point in time. I think eight teams is a good number to go with.
Because it just seems like you get those, not necessarily all top eight. Notre Dame is a great team, and they may move up a couple spots if they can beat Stanford. You know, but it feels like after you get past four, at least five and six always seem to have an argument for them. You know what I'm saying here?
Yeah.
And that's where we're getting like, oh, well, should Clemson have a chance if they lose to Miami? Yeah. Why not give them a chance in a playoff? Because like I said,
right,
Miami beat the Irish, and kudos to them. But I don't know how that would go in a rematch. Maybe it goes the exact same way and they just pummel them. It's a closer game. I don't know.
Let's not forget that this is the same Tigers team that just won last year.
Right.
So a lot of credit and maybe respect goes to them because they're reigning national champions. So, okay.
Let's talk at least locals. BYU playing Hawaii. John, who you taking this week?
Is it in Hawaii?
Yes.
I take Hawaii.
I'm going to have to take Hawaii too. Cougars haven't shown me enough to believe otherwise.
Cougars finished 3-10, their worst record in what, 50 years?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Okay. How about the Utes? I believe they are playing Colorado this week.
I believe they're an 11-point favorite in that game, too, if I last it checked.
In Utah, I will give Utah that one. Colorado's not that great either.
Isn't this Utah's chance for bowl eligibility?
If I believe so. Doesn't this get them to 6 wins?
I believe so.
Yeah, this would get them to 6-6. It would get them a bowl.
Okay. Yeah, I'll take Utah.
I think here's a question. If they lose this, do you think Whittingham's hot seat gets too hot?
No.
No. I don't think it gets too hot. Yeah. I think it gets a little warm, but I don't think it's hot yet.
There's too many other factors with Utah this year that people forget. They lost how many players to the NFL this year?
A lot.
There's quite a few. I couldn't say Witt is on the hot seat at all. And I think it's ludicrous for people.
I've just seen a lot of grumblings from Ute Twitter, so I was wondering what consensus was.
I've seen the same grumblings.
Okay, you know what? When it comes to maybe I shouldn't do this.
No. Well, maybe. I'm gonna use the word ludicrous. It's ludicrous to suggest he's on the hot seat, period. And I have a lot of Ute friends that'll probably disagree with me and a lot of Ute fans that'll say, bravo, Alan, but it's ludicrous to suggest he's on the hot seat. You've got the best thing that Utah's had in years.
Utah fans, and this can be said about a lot of teams, but I recognize it because I am one of them. They are a little reactive to situations and tend to get a little, what's the word I'm looking for, Alan? Kind of dramatic about things.
Yes, yes.
You know, and it's part of Twitter, you know, that
it's not just Twitter, it's Facebook and it's other mediums. I've seen it across multiple mediums.
The stadium during the games. It just happens. Yeah, it's been a rough season, and it is what it is, and it will really suck if they miss a bowl. But you figure it out, you get another year with some of these guys, and you kind of go from there. Yeah, there have been some mistakes with the coaching. I think we can all agree with that. Maybe things should have been done differently this last week and at other times, but I don't know. I don't think Witt's going anywhere yet.
Okay, I know these quick hits and stuff. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I just want to say something here. For all the Ute fans out there that listen and hear me, okay, just a thought. They're in the Pac-12, and in the last, I don't know, I went out and looked up the records of all the teams in the Pac-12. Arizona State, in its entire tenure in the Pac-12, has won the Pac-12 championship, gone to the Rose Bowl, counted on one hand, 3 times. Arizona once. And they have both been in the Pac-12 for 40 years. 41 to be exact.
So you're saying it's going to be like another 35 years?
I'm just saying. USC owns the Pac-12. They've won it 30, I think it was like 34, 36 times. They lead the Pac-12. Why can't people understand? It's the Pac-12. And it's few and far between outside of Stanford, Oregon, Washington, USC, and UCLA. If you're not one of those 5 or 6 teams, you got to take the wins when you can get them. Otherwise, it's just how it goes.
Right? All right, let's leave the horse alone. I heard it neighing in the background. let's talk Utah State, because I'm sure we have like one Utah State fan. I'm kidding. There's probably a few of you out there. Utah State playing Air Force this week. Saturday evening game at Air Force. Who you taking?
Utah State.
Are you?
Why not? You said it's at Air Force, though?
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb and make a bold statement. They're going to win. Bold prediction.
Air Force does not appear to be very good this season.
Utah State.
Okay. Now we need to talk about something very important.
Weber
State, Dub State.
Yes, sir.
My Dub State. Well, I share custody with Dame, but anyway, they are Big Sky champs. Shut up, Southern Utah. And they got a playoff game at home.
Yes, they do.
First playoff game at home ever.
Jay Hill's done a good job.
Great job. So they will be taking on Western Illinois. This is a Saturday game, 2 p.m. If you're in the Ogden area, go check it out. Who are you taking? Do the Cats get the win at home?
Yes.
That there was like no hesitation there.
Nope.
John?
Yeah. They'll get it.
I was hoping there would be some debate here, but I guess this is case closed.
Nope. No debate. Weber State's the best team in the state.
Woo! Shut up, Southern Utah. All right.
Yeah, Southern Utah is clearing its throat on that one.
We beat you guys head to head. And don't care.
Did you understand that Weber State's the best football team, college football team in the state?
Same record as Southern Utah.
Shut up, Southern Utah. All right. Real quick, we're going to run through the NFL. Tell me what games you are looking forward to this week. Vikings, Lions. Chargers, Cowboys. Giants, Redskins. Browns, Bengals.
Ew.
Right? Like, just keep that one in Ohio. Don't let it out. Panthers, Jets. Titans, Colts. Bucks, Falcons. Dolphins, Patriots.
There you go. Maybe. Maybe.
Bears, Eagles.
Okay, that one, yes.
You just want a bloodbath, don't you?
No, I just want the Eagles to continue their dominance. Carson Wentz.
Well, it's the Bears, so.
I know.
And, John, did you see Allen actually made an appearance on the football game?
No, I didn't.
Did you see that?
Uh-uh.
Okay, we'll make sure we
what
share.
What did I miss?
You go to your brother's account and DM him that picture real quick. You're right there. Look it up.
You want me?
Just DM him the tweet from Nigel. Nigel found it and tweeted it.
My brother was watching the game, and he found...
My doppelganger.
No, it was not a doppelganger. It had to be Alan. And he was in a Philadelphia jersey, nonetheless.
Oh, dear.
So I'm gonna send this over to you. You should have it in your DMs. I'm sliding right in there.
There you go.
Hey, Germs. You open up my tweet, go over to the broskies, and take a look at this. And we'll share this on the Jedi and Germs account, because this is something that the people need to see.
We're waiting for live reaction from John.
Oh, so you sent it to the Germs guy account? Okay.
No, he sent it to the group account.
Sweet baby. Oh my gosh, that is so you. Oh, congratulations, Alan.
Right?
I didn't know you're in the NFL.
All right, John. So go ahead and retweet that. You know, as Devin did. Oh my word.
All right.
That is why Alan has taken an interest in the Eagles all of a sudden. He's like, I've liked them since the Ty Detmer days. No, it's just because you're on the team. All right, moving on. Bills, Chiefs, Seahawks, 49ers. See if that one's exciting like it was the last time the two teams met. Conference matchup between the Broncos and the Raiders. Normally, I would be excited, but at this point, I just don't care anymore. Saints and Rams, I like that one. That is, yes, a game I'm interested in.
Yes.
Rams had a tough week with their offense last week, but the Saints have been the hottest team in the league, so this will be interesting.
Yeah.
Jaguars, Cardinals, Packers, Steelers, and Texans, Ravens. Anything there that really catches your eye or your ear?
You know, I wish the Vikings Lions game was middle game instead of the first game on Thanksgiving, because of the Thanksgiving games, that's the one I think that's going to be best.
So do I. So do I.
It really is. That one's going to get lost in the cooking.
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there, and that can be the quick hits.
All right. And Devin, I know you're struggling with the Denver Broncos. I mean, they did fire their coach this week too, didn't they?
They did.
Did they? I'm just kidding.
They did.
Did they? I don't know. I know.
They replaced their quarterback.
I know.
Paxton's getting the start.
I'm just joking. Come on.
UCLA fired Mora. That was a coaching shakeup.
I don't know. I was just messing around with you. I saw something across the interwebs. It was probably just a joke.
Fake news.
Yeah, it was fake news.
It was fake news.
I just had to give you a heart stop for a minute there, too, so that's all.
No, you didn't. Fake news, fakers, faking news. John, please go to pop culture.
All right, moving on to our final segment, pop culture.
All right. I stayed in this week. I didn't actually see any movies in theaters. So I
did.
Watched a movie on Netflix. Are you okay?
What did you watch on Netflix?
Watched Mudbound. Mudbound did get a brief theatrical release so that it could get Academy Award considerations. I thought it was really good. It's really hard to sit through, to the point that we're about 40 minutes into the movie and my wife said she just couldn't take it anymore. Because it's all about the injustice and racism of 1940s Mississippi. And that aspect is pretty hard to sit through. And my wife's actually studying a lot about racial history of the United States. So she's kind of immersed in it. And she just got to a point where she's like, I just can't take this anymore. So yeah, it's rough, but it is really good. Really good acting. It's all about these two poor families in Mississippi, one white and one black. And it's all about the tragedy of, you know, they're basically in the same class, but racism is like this extra level where poor white people could like push poor black people down to another level. It mainly focuses on two of the guys who go off into World War II and serve their country in World War II, one white, one black. And, you know, they're heroes over there and they come home and they go back to their life and the black soldier has to come back to a town where he's still expected to use the white-only fountains and expected to use the back door to go into stores. And it's really rough, but the acting is really, really good. Carey Mulligan is the main actress in it. She was in Wall Street 2 and Education and a bunch of other stuff like that. And it has Jason Mitchell, who played Eazy-E in Straight Outta Compton. This is another really good performance from him. Garrett Hedlund, who's been one that I haven't been that crazy about some of his work. He played Captain Hook in that Pan remake a few years ago. He's really good here. He's probably the one that if they try to get a Best Supporting Actor nomination, I would guess it would probably be for him. It would be between him and Jason Mitchell. So it's really hard to sit through. It's very powerful. It's painful. And I wouldn't be surprised if it does start getting some nomination love.
Okay. Mudbound.
Yep.
Any interest in The Punisher?
I am interested. I haven't started it yet because I never did watch The Defenders.
Neither have I.
I'm guessing The Punisher is probably okay to just start without watching The Defenders. But yeah. I'm kind of slowing down on Marvel Netflix right now.
I got you. Well, and I think I think that Punisher, you probably got enough of him from Daredevil season 2 that I think you could probably jump into it without an issue.
Yeah,
you're right. I haven't touched on Defenders either, and I've slowed down. Let's be honest. For me, Daredevil was it. I haven't gotten into too many of the other series. I tried to watch Jessica Jones, just couldn't do it. And maybe I'll go back to it after a couple of episodes in it. I was like, man, this is dark, because it really was. So I need to pick it up again. Maybe there's a few Netflix series I need to pick up again. I'm trying to think. The True Crimes, Law and Order True Crimes series finally came to an end, the Menendez brothers.
Yeah. You were watching that too?
Yeah. Did you finish it?
Yeah, I did.
What were your thoughts?
Well, as a show, the show made me really think a lot about that case and how Menendez brothers probably got an unfair deal. When you look at the times, I don't think the child abuse allegations were taken very seriously. And you could just really feel the injustice of what was going on. On the other hand, I read an article on what the show got wrong from somebody who covered the trial. And the facts that she pointed out that the series changed made me go, well, okay, maybe. Maybe justice was...
Enlighten me.
But as... Well, for one thing, the first thing they show is in the flashbacks, they show the two parents stand up and face the boys when they shoot them. And forensics showed that the father was shot in the back of the head, sitting in his chair. And it also points out that Eric reloaded his gun to finish killing his mom. And so that right there, they changed that. That adds a whole... That's much different, because their cases, they thought they were in imminent danger, and they thought that when they were bursting through those doors, as far as they knew, their parents were going to have guns too to kill them when they started firing. But the forensics actually showed that their parents were both still just sitting there when they burst in and killed the father instantly with a gunshot to the back of the head. Right. So, you know, that colors the whole case. And the reporter mentioned some of the problems with their lawyer, Leslie Abramson, and how she thought that Leslie Abramson was painted as this saintly tiger mom when she actually did a lot more screw-ups during the trial. Like the changing of the doctor's notes.
Yes.
There were actually large sections that she had the doctor cut out.
So, they ended up touching on that only briefly in the series. I was surprised they didn't touch on it more. And later on in the week, this last week, I think Saturday, they had on NBC, what is it, the Lester Holt show that's late Saturday evening, I think.
Dateline.
Yeah, they had a special Dateline on the Menendez brothers. And that particular episode touched very much, actually, on that particular issue alone, the changing of the doctor's notes. So I'm surprised they didn't touch on it as much in the series. A couple of things I wasn't particularly fond of. I don't like that judge, and I felt like the series painted
him. Well, you're supposed to hate him. That's the thing.
That series painted him so ugly, and from what I've read and understood, he was that way. And if the other thing of note is the fact that it happened at the same time as we've come to know as Rodney King and also O.J. Simpson. Wouldn't you know it that it was those trials that really hurt that judge to begin with. Weinberg was his name, I believe.
I think it was Weisberg.
That's right. And so it was like this case was, those boys were destined to be thrown to the wolves by him regardless because of just how badly he'd been painted because of the previous trial that he had done. And he was out for blood, and he was out to change his reputation and to look good in public standing. And I thought they painted it well in the series. I'm not a fan of him after that series, not at all.
What was funny watching this and People versus O.J. Simpson, Gil Garcetti is a sympathetic figure in People versus O.J. Simpson, where he's the DA who just knows this guy is guilty. But in the Menendez series, Gil Garcetti is just this ruthless, I'm going to get them no matter what at any cost.
Right.
Type of guy where he's just really kind of a jerk, kind of a villain. It was just kind of funny how different production companies can portray the same people in different light.
Agreed. Yeah, totally agree. And when all is said and done, I mean, it's not like we have to remind people. I mean, remind myself even that these are Hollywood productions. But there's some factual truth to a lot of it anyway. And like you said, there's some inconsistencies. Just it's interesting to revisit some of these things that were happening for us while we were teenagers, you know, end of our teenage years, early years. Just to revisit some of this, kind of crazy, you know. So I enjoyed it. I hope they do more of these true crime shows, Law and Order true crime miniseries like this, because that one was great. I'd love for them to tackle maybe another, you know, some sort of case issue in the past that they can bring to light again through one of these series. So,
oh, I'm sure they will.
I thought it was very
good. I'm trying to remember if Law and Order True Crime has announced their next one yet. But American Crime Story, I know they're... Oh, I saw it announced like a couple months ago.
Right.
I'm trying to remember which one they're taking on next.
Well, I know...
Oh, Versace. That's what it was.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So... Well, and so I know we've been at this for a while, and we're about ready to wrap up. I think next week we're going to look to, hopefully you'll get a chance this weekend to maybe watch Justice League. I've seen it. I hope we get a chance to talk about it next week.
Yes, also, I will do whatever I can to see it this week.
Also, Coco is out this weekend, and I really would like to see it. I don't know if I'll get a chance to. Just bought tickets for Thanksgiving Day morning with my family, though. We're going to go see, what did I tell you guys I was going to go see tonight that we didn't? I
forget. Wonder.
Wonder. Going to see Wonder Thanksgiving morning. I'll have to report on that next week as well. So,
my kids have read the book and they're dying to see the movie.
Yeah, so have my kids. They want to see this. My wife wants to. So we're going to make an event of it Thanksgiving morning. So I'll have something to talk about with that. But yeah, that's a little teaser for next week. And hopefully the Jazz will be 3-0, over their next three games by then.
Not going to happen.
Devin, stop it.
Be thankful for high draft picks.
By the way, I have to cover myself. It was the offensive coordinator for Denver that was fired, not the head coach. My bad.
You owned up to it. Cool. We forgive you.
I did. Okay. Thank you all for joining us for yet another great edition of Jedi and Germs. We appreciate you being along with us each and every week. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter, Jedi and Germs. Find us anywhere you listen to podcasts, Jedi and Germs. Take some time, leave a review, please. We appreciate it. It helps our algorithms for our episode. It helps us out quite a bit. Take some time, leave us a review, and join our discussion and get at us if you like what you've heard. Thank you all so very much. Have a great week and a happy Thanksgiving and happy holidays to all of you. John, take us out.
Bye, everybody.